Occult Assassin, number 2.5, Ice Shadows, a novella, written by William Massa, narrated by James Foster. Chapter 1. Whirling snowflakes landed on Kristen's face like icy kisses as her athletic frame hurtled down the steep mountain at 50-plus miles per hour. Sending sprays of powder into the air, she skied with the skill and carefree abandon of someone in their mid-twenties. All around her, a state-of-the-art lighting system turned the tree-lined slopes into an azure, phantasmagorical winter wonderland. Kristen had arrived in Bergen, Norway, less than 48 hours earlier. Originally from Oslo, she worked as an account executive for a large advertising firm in London, but tried to visit as often as her hectic schedule permitted. After the failure of her most recent romantic relationship, a doomed coupling with a French commercial director, the mountains of her homeland had been calling her. Ahead, the trail forked, and Kristen opted for the steeper, more challenging backcountry chute. Twilight deepened, and the woods grew dark. With fewer light poles available, she'd have to rely on her other senses. She tightened her body, further increasing her speed. For a moment, her problems ceased to matter, and she felt in complete control. How she wished some of that confidence extended to her love life. She had tried to convince herself that Pierre was just a fling, but she was heartbroken. Their relationship had lasted for less than a month before the flowers and fancy dinners gave way to unanswered calls and unreturned texts. After 3 days of radio silence, she'd gotten the hint. The Frenchman had moved on. Why had she thought she could tame a well-known Lothario and heartbreaker? She was pulled out of her thoughts when her eyes landed on an unexpected obstacle directly ahead. A 6-foot-high wall of ice blocked the narrow trail. The blockade flexed and rippled in the starlight. She'd seen videos of ice heaves, tsunami-style waves of frozen water rippling over shorelines and damaging homes. She had forgotten the science behind the phenomenon, but she did know it occurred near lakes and required strong winds. So what had triggered such a strange anomaly at this high altitude, and why did it only seem to be affecting the ski trail? All these thoughts slashed through her mind within a handful of seconds. The time for speculation had run out. The ice barrier was upon her. She had to act fast. A direct impact at this speed would kill her. Kristen dug the edges of her skis into the powder. The maneuver sent her flying. Airborne, she twisted her body in midair and landed butt first, as she'd been trained to do. Her derriere absorbed the brunt of the fall as she slid down the trail on her back. The powdery snow cushioned the impact, and Kristen counted her blessings. An icy surface would have been far less pleasant. For a moment, she just lay there, the cold seeping through her ski jacket, her breath misted in the chilly darkness. She predicted some ugly bruises in the morning, but her training and quick reflexes had spared her any broken bones. With a determined grunt, Kristen performed a press-up while holding the base of her poles with an uphill hand. Her upper body strength was well developed from regular gym visits, and she quickly got back on her feet. She dusted thick clumps of snow off her ski suit and bindings before taking a closer look at the surreal sight in front of her. A row of frozen stalagmites jabbed into the air like the teeth of some buried ice giant. Kristen shivered as she gained a stronger sense of her situation. She was alone on the deserted chute, and no sound broke the unnerving silence. Making matters worse, one of the nearby light poles began to flicker and grow dark. Shit. Other lights followed suit and winked off, drenching the mountain in darkness. The sole illumination now emanated from the dim stars overhead. What was going on? She decided to round the barrier and continue down the mountain as quickly as possible. She instinctively sensed that she was in danger. To suppress her fear, she concentrated on the task at hand. She trudged along the frozen barricade, moving toward the tree line on the left side of the trail. How she wished some other skier would materialize, but the odds were slim considering the late hour. The sound of her skis crunching over the snow echoed eerily on the forlorn trail, and her pulse quickened. The wind had picked up and now cut through her clothes. Her teeth chattered, and each breath was like inhaling ice. So much for being inured to the cold. She always teased her British colleagues when they complained about their comparatively mild winters, but this was different. The temperature must have dropped over 20 degrees since she took her tumble in the snow. How is this possible? She reached the trees and began to round the strange ice wall. Behind her, the branches stirred, wooden fingers brushing against her back. She stifled a scream. Get a grip on yourself. Just a few more seconds and she'd be on her way, blasting down the trail and headed for the safety of the base about 800 feet below. She suddenly noticed strange carvings etched into the trees. Her eyes narrowed and she had to lean forward to catch a better look. As a native Norwegian, she recognized the symbols as runes, the characters of the alphabet used by the ancient people of Northern Europe. She didn't know the meaning of these symbols, but it deepened her sense of dread. Heart hammering in her chest, she turned away from the trees and wove around the icy obstacle. Fear fueled her movements. Reality had narrowed to one simple objective. She had to get back on the trail. Her singular focus paid off, and she reached the other side of the ice wall, only to grow dead still. Three human silhouettes blocked the trail ahead. A scream wanted to escape from Kristen's throat, but her lips were frozen shut. The tall, gaunt snowboarders loomed before her, creating a human barrier across the width of the chute. Even if she managed to somehow weave around them, nothing would stop them from chasing after her. The spooky trio advanced. As they stepped into the moonlight, Kristen realized they all wore fiberglass skull helmets favored by both hardcore snowboarders and paintballers. They looked more like monstrous medieval skeleton creatures than masked humans. Despite the punishing cold and her mounting terror, Kristen exploded into motion. Using her poles, she pushed away from the figures and shot back toward the trees. She had barely advanced a few feet when a massive silhouette peeled from the shadow-soaked woods, barring her escape. Like the others, he wore a skull mask that erased all humanity from his visage, and a glittering knife extended from his gloved hand. Kristen's piercing scream cut through the forest, but was quickly drowned out by the unforgiving wind. Chapter 2. They called him the Vampire. His real name was Rezok, and he was the lead singer of the Norwegian black metal band Ice God. He also happened to be the reason why Mark Tallon had come to Bergen, Norway, and found himself in a rundown pub surrounded by a mob of screaming, drunk fans. Any minute now, Ice God would hit the stage, and the anticipation in the crowd was palpable. Tallon shared their excitement, but for different reasons. This was a recon mission, and he hoped to catch a closer look at the enemy. All eyes in the club remained riveted on the dark stage, lips mouthing the lyrics to their favorite doom and gloom songs. The surging throng wore exclusively black. Any other color was frowned upon. Interspersed with the hardcore constituents were a few conservative-looking guys seeking to get drunk while listening to some gnarly Norwegian metal. Judging from the disapproving stares these outsiders received, the real fans considered them impersonators who lacked the balls to commit. It took more to make you a true member of the scene than loosening that tie and trading a pair of slacks for black jeans after putting in a long week as a cubicle drone. Tallon's years as a special operator in Afghanistan and Iraq had taught him the value of blending in and becoming part of the scenery. He'd opted for the black metal uniform of choice, a leather jacket, jeans, and steel-tipped combat boots. The t-shirt of an obscure Danish band with an illegible name sold the look. No one questioned the authenticity of his commitment to the movement. Or if they did, his 6'1", well-muscled frame and the fire in his eyes made them keep it to themselves. Tallon inhaled the sour stench of wood soaked in beer mixed with human perspiration. He had frequented enough shitty third-world dives in his Delta days to pick up on the undercurrent of violence when it was present. Some of the characters in this crowd were already visibly drunk, chasing vodka shots with beer and letting out shouts of anticipation while fist-pumping the air. Tallon took a sip of his Ringnes Pils, Norway's leading brew, and waited. He didn't have to wait for long. The lights soon dimmed and the bar grew silent. Even the hushed whispers ceased. The energy had changed. An air of reverence and dark wonder now permeated the establishment. The stage lit up in a blaze of lights that speared through the pub's smoky darkness. Four tall, gaunt, and long-haired figures stood revealed. The silence gave way to ecstatic howls. The members of Ice God were decked out in leather trench coats and black pants complemented by motorcycle boots. Spiked gauntlets and belts encircled their wrists and waists. Each band member wore a rune around his neck on a string necklace. Corpse paint with black highlights covered their faces. They made Talon think of goths on steroids, or a twisted version of Kiss. But unlike the classic playful 70s rock group, these sinister figures projected a worn, haunted quality, and their blackened eyes glittered with contempt and hatred. Lost souls who had declared war against mainstream society. Only item missing is the church-burning kit, Talon thought. Talon scanned the stage. Still no sign of Razok. The feverish anticipation in the pub was nearing its breaking point. Suddenly a raspy, grave, dark voice emanated from the darkness.
Are you ready for the final winter?
The question achieved its desired effect. The crowd went nuts. Razok knew how to work up his flock, and they were eager for it. The power of the black metal god could not be denied. As the band began to unleash the first volley of their sonic assault, the lights dimmed slightly in anticipation of the night's main attraction. The guitars rose to a furious crescendo as Razok stepped onto the stage. One glance told Talon the reports had been true. Ice God's lead singer didn't have to wear corpse paint to create a vampiric countenance. His complete absence of pigment appeared to be natural. Razok was an albino, his skin and long flowing hair a pure white color. Like all those afflicted with his chromosomal abnormality, he had a heightened sensitivity to light. Defying the myths that had sprung up around albinism, his eyes weren't pink or red, but a faded gray and burned with an intensity that electrified the room. Talon remembered watching an interview where Razok claimed that he buried his clothes before a performance so they would soak up the scent of the grave. The outlandish claims had elicited chuckles, but Talon wasn't laughing right now. Something about experiencing Ice God's lead singer up close made it impossible to ignore him. Razok was a force to be reckoned with. He brought up his mic and switched to Norwegian, barking another guttural greeting at his enraptured fans. Talon didn't understand the words, but he could gauge their effect on the crowd. Razok was rallying an army. Fighting in the War on Terror had given Talon a healthy respect for the power of misguided ideology. It didn't matter whether it was a jihadist preaching to a flock of extreme Islamists in some Saudi Arabian mosque, or a Norwegian black metal god addressing his followers in a Bergen dive. The music kicked in. The shrieked vocals, demonic tempos, and static-infused production built into a roar of angst, fury, and loathing. Despite the noise and unfiltered aggression, Talon couldn't deny the undeniable power and evil beauty of the band's ferocious set. Talon didn't judge people by the music they listened to. Hell, he'd followed his share of crazy bands over the years. Theatrics came with the gig. The edgier the band, the greater the appeal. But black metal seemed to be all about the edge and the abyss that lurked beyond. As Ice God powered through the first couple of songs, the throng erupted in a blaze of violent movement. Razok's leather-clad followers pumped their arms as if possessed. Elbows shot out wildly. Enthralled by the performance, no one cared who was hit or hurt during these drunken pub aerobics. Most of the fans welcomed the violent onslaught, cherishing each bruise and bloody nose as hard-earned, much-treasured battle scars. One foolish fan tried to elbow Talon in the ribs. Bad idea. Talon anticipated the sly attack, sidestepped the blow, and snatched the big man's right hand. He twisted the limb, and the fan let out a pain-filled grunt. They traded glances, and Talon's cold, hard stare made him back off. You're not as dumb as you look, Talon thought. As the concert wore on, somehow the message got around not to mess with the American, and the other moshing fans maintained a respectful distance. Talon continued to study the spectral figures, memorizing their movements. They all shared a lean, lanky quality he'd found among the best operators. The aggressive athleticism of their performance could not be denied. He'd have to factor their speed and stamina into any future encounters with them. If Simon Koska's intel was to be believed, two of the band members were once in the Marinejegerkommandoen, the Norwegian Special Forces. They'd been kicked out of the MJK after being accused of assault and rape. Talon wasn't going up against some soft, beer-bellied mama's boys with a penchant for pagan rock. These were elite soldiers gone bad. All of a sudden, an over-eager concertgoer jumped up on stage and whipped out a razor blade. The piece of sharp metal sparkled in the strobing spotlights. Talon saw no fear in Razok's eyes. Instead, his dead white features lit up with an approving smile. The fan raised both his hands and bowed as if he had indeed entered the presence of some Nordic god. Without hesitation, he drew the razor over his palm and held up his gushing hand at Razok in a twisted salute. The abrupt movement sent speckles of blood flying across the stage. A few drops hit Razok's face, the crimson in stark contrast with the marble of his skin. What happened next stunned Talon. With a hungry smile, Razok licked his lips until the enamel of his teeth turned scarlet with the other man's blood. Talon was beginning to understand how Razok had earned his nickname. Chapter 3. After an hour of being a willing target for Ice God's sonic assault, Talon stepped out of the pub. An unforgiving blast of Arctic air greeted him, and frozen pinpricks raked his lungs. Norway was experiencing its worst winter in decades. Even the locals, famous for their fortitude in the face of bitter weather, were beginning to complain. Talon headed for the pub's deserted parking lot. According to Koska's file on Razok, the black metal singer owned a 1999 Hyundai. Talon immediately spotted the van. Its body was scarred with rust and looked beaten up. The windows were tinted and tattooed with the peeling stickers of various ominous bands. Skulls and pentagrams abounded. The vehicle radiated a sinister energy and lurked like a dangerous beast in the lot. On a logical level, Talon knew the van was used to carry the band's equipment, but a primitive part of him was convinced it might contain far darker cargo. He swiftly placed a radio transmitter under the group's ride. From now on, he would be tracking every move Ice God made. Objective achieved, Talon slipped into the night. Despite the cold, he decided to walk back to his hotel instead of cabbing it. He wanted to build up his mental toughness to the climate, but also hoped to gain a better situational awareness of the picturesque city. Memorizing a map was a poor substitute for exploring a place on foot. The icy night air cut deep into his bones as he walked along the water, passing a line of moored, swaying boats. Bergen was founded more than 900 years ago, but today it's Norway's second-largest city, with a population of 240,000. To Talon, Bergen felt both modern and magical, an example of living history. Rows of postcard-perfect homes climbed up the mountainside and overlooked the sea. The irony was not lost on him that a country with one of the lowest crime rates in the world and best social support systems would spawn a musical genre dedicated to Armageddon and chaos. Talon's thoughts remained preoccupied with his latest target. Despite the nickname, Razok wasn't a supernatural creature of the night. Vampires weren't real. The enemies Talon faced in this new war were evil men, not fantastical creations. Fools reckless and ruthless enough to tap into occult forces that they could never hope to understand, much less control. These misguided souls were attempting to unlock ancient secrets and harness powers beyond anything the human imagination could conjure. And sometimes, in their insane attempts to master the dark arts, monsters could indeed be born. As Talon passed the fish market, his thoughts turned back to the events of the last 48 hours and what had set him on Razok's trail. He was staying with an old army buddy in Astoria, Queens, when he received Simon Koska's text. The billionaire, according to Forbes, one of the 100 richest men in the country, expected to meet him in an hour for lunch. He'd chosen Bar Primi in the Bowery, one of the hottest new Italian eateries in Manhattan. Was the billionaire showing off again, or did rich people just gravitate toward trendy places? Talon suspected it was a bit of both. Personally, he'd take a burger and fries over some fancy overpriced small plate dinner any day of the week. But as long as Costco was picking up the check, why not indulge him? Talon caught the next subway headed into the city. Talon sensed that the impending lunch wasn't a social call. 3 weeks had gone by since the horrifying events in Arizona, and his instincts told him the brief lull in the fighting was nearing its end. The billionaire would have a new mission for him. A mixture of excitement and dread filled the pit of his stomach. Going into battle was never easy. All too soon, he'd be facing the horrors once more. Talon found it hard to believe that only 4 months had passed since he first ran into Koska back in San Francisco. It felt like the eccentric billionaire had been a part of his life for a lot longer. Most of the world regarded Koska as just another rich weirdo, a 21st century Howard Hughes. Talon knew better. Simon Koska had studied the world's occult traditions for years and had become one of the leading experts on the subject. Similar to the NSA, which monitored the chatter of various terrorist networks, Koska kept his ear to the ground when it came to worldwide occult activity. If a biker gang had been accused of devil worship or an African warlord was rumored to practice voodoo rituals, it would be on Koska's radar. If he concluded there was something to the reports, a real possibility that evil men were trying to tap into some ancient darkness, Koska would send Talon after them. He got off the train at Astor Plaza and walked the remaining blocks. The crisp December air put a bounce in his step. He loved winters in Manhattan. As long as the sky remained clear and the sun burned bright, he didn't mind the cold. A few minutes later, he walked through the doors of Bar Premi. The establishment exuded an authentic old-world charm. Despite it not being noon yet, the place was filling up already. The hostess led Talon to what appeared to be the best table in the house. No surprise there. Koska traveled in style. The man himself was sipping an aperitif and enjoying Italian bread and olive oil. He faced an open stealth MacBook Pro that, at $6,000, was one of the most expensive laptops in the world. The soft-touch housing left the machine with a no-nonsense matte black finish even Batman would be envious of. Koska had told Talon Apple produced a limited-edition run of 10 units, and he owned two of the 256-gigabyte SSD machines. Show off. Talon had barely sat down when the waitress arrived with a perfectly chilled bottle of Peroni. Talon gratefully accepted the Italian beer, and his gaze found a smiling Koska. The two men represented a study in contrasts. Talon was athletic and rugged with an animal magnetism, while the 25-year-old Koska projected wealth and sophistication with a boyish charm. Talon favored jeans and a Green Army surplus jacket, while Koska wore $2,000 skin-tight suits by Prada, befitting a man worth north of $1 billion. What connected these two men was shared tragedy. Both their lives had been devastated by the occult. Koska hadn't even turned 12 when members of a devil cult invaded his parents' lush Silicon Valley estate and slaughtered the servants and his sister. Only Koska had been spared and was taken hostage by the cult. They were about to sacrifice Koska when the FBI raided the estate and saved his life. The horrific experience had shaped him as greatly as the events in San Francisco had impacted Talon. In the years that followed, Koska began to prepare for a war with the occult. Despite his vast knowledge and considerable resources, he lacked the training and lethal skill to carry out his plan. He needed a modern-day warrior, and found one when his path crossed with that of the Delta operator. Talon would be the soldier the billionaire could only aspire to be. The man in the field, operating with all the firepower and knowledge Koska's wealth and expertise could provide. Talon could be Koska's assassin. The billionaire flashed him a welcoming smile. I took the liberty of ordering your drink. Service can be a bit slow around lunchtime. Thanks. Talon sipped his Peroni. It felt refreshing and made him recall his stay in the Milan countryside a few months back when he tracked a satanic cult that was abducting and murdering tourists. Have you had a chance to recover somewhat from the events in Arizona? If you're asking me if I'm ready to get back to work, the answer is yes. After a beat, he added, So what's good here? I hear the orichette with sausage is exquisite. The muscle app is supposed to be pretty amazing, too. Why don't you just order for the both of us? Talon suggested. Koska nodded and indicated to the server that they were ready. The billionaire used the Italian names of all the dishes. Though Talon spoke four languages, Italian wasn't one of them. He would just let Koska surprise him. You can't go wrong with Italian, right? Once the waiter turned away from the table, Koska removed a small stone engraved with a strange symbol and slid it toward Talon, who eyed it curiously. Familiar with runestones? Talon inspected the item in question. He'd done his share of reading on the occult in the last year, learning and studying the enemy, but he was a long ways from becoming an expert like Koska. Runes were a form of writing used by the ancient northern European tribes, Talon said. The Celts, Vikings, and Germans before they adopted the Latin alphabet when they became Christianized. In short, runes are Viking hieroglyphics. I'm impressed. Someone has been doing their homework. Talon took another swig of his beer, his eyes never leaving Koska. Your turn. What's this all about? In addition to being a writing system, runes served a purpose in magic. We find evidence of this in Icelandic magical staves and Germanic runic spells. Get to the point, Dr. Strange, Talon said with a grin. He wouldn't quite call Casca a friend. In a weird way, they had become too dependent on each other for that label. They were partners, business associates, comrades in arms, but not buddies. At least, not how Talon understood the term. They didn't catch movies, hit bars, or play sports together. Casca was part general and part intelligence officer, and their dynamic was all business. The billionaire respected Talon's marksmanship and steely self-command in combat situations. Talon admired Casca's vast knowledge and the laser-like focus he brought to their asymmetrical shadow war against the forces of darkness. Over the course of the last few months, however, Talon had come to the conclusion that he liked his benefactor, and even enjoyed teasing him from time to time. A number of runestones were stolen from various Scandinavian museums in the last 6 months, Casca elaborated. The most recent robbery occurred at the Icelandic Museum of Sorcery and Witchcraft. He punched up the photographs of the runestones and continued. The original runeset, the Futhark, consists of 24 runes which can be divided into three sets of eight, known as Ets. His eyes lit up with intellectual enthusiasm for the subject matter. The billionaire had developed a genuine fascination for the occult that sometimes worried Talon. Personally, he had a little less patience for the esoteric details. Just tell me what I'm up against and who I need to take out, Talon thought. All the stolen runes are part of a set that belonged to Tsar Akka, the Winter Warlock. He was a feared Finnish practitioner of the dark arts who worshipped the Nordic ice god Ull. If the legends are to be believed, the runestones gave Tsar Akka Ull's power to control snow and ice. He was captured by witch hunters in 1754 and executed for his alleged black magic crimes. Sounds like a lovely Christmas story. Perfect for the whole family. Casca cocked an eyebrow at Talon, yet chose not to respond to the flippant comment. He might not always find Talon's humor amusing, but he had come to tolerate it. The rune set was broken up and dispersed across the various Scandinavian nations to prevent them from being reunited. Until now, Talon said. Casca nodded. So who do you suspect is behind these robberies? Talon asked. Casca would have a theory. He always did. Are you familiar with black metal music? Casca inquired. Talon shook his head. He'd been a bit of a metalhead back in the day, but nowadays his taste ran toward hard rock and alternative. That's what turning 30 could do to you. Black metal evolved from Swedish death metal in the 80s and became weaponized by extreme ideology in the 90s. Initially dabbling with Satanism, the movement soon came to embrace paganism and ancient Norse ritual. Casca tapped a button on his laptop. An image of Razok and the other members of Ice God flashed on screen. Talon immediately took note of Razok's genetic affliction. One of the biggest bands in the scene is Ice God, led by its outspoken lead singer Razok, suspected of murder and a string of church burnings, but there hasn't been enough evidence to make any of it stick. Charming. A new image of Razok appeared on screen and showed the ghostly musician skiing down a series of steep mountains. With his alabaster skin, he blended in with the frozen background. Razok is a dedicated Olympic-level night skier and obsessed with Scandinavian occult magic. He's known for combining Norse magical imagery in the look and songs of his band. The Winter Warlock is one of Razok's spiritual heroes and the inspiration for his music. Over the years, he's acquired three of Tsar Akka's rune stones at various auctions across Europe. And you believe he decided to complete his collection. Let's just say Ice God's touring schedule corresponds with the dates on which the thefts of the other stones occurred. They were in the right country at the right time. What does Razok plan to do with these stones? Good question. Since Ice God's return to Norway, seven women have gone missing. Talon's eyes narrowed at this latest revelation. The last few months had taught him that human sacrifice fueled ritual magic. Had these missing women become part of some ancient Nordic rite? Tell me about the missing women. All of them were in their 20s, white, blonde, of Norwegian descent. How is the police investigation proceeding? The authorities refuse to acknowledge a link and are treating the abductions as unrelated crimes to stave off a panic. But people are talking, and rumors are spreading. Any patterns to the kidnapping? The Vix were all locals from the Oslo and Bergen region. Talon studied the image of Ice God again. Even more disconcerting is the fact that Norway is experiencing its harshest winter in recorded history. I've analyzed the temperature pattern, and it keeps dropping a few degrees with each successive kidnapping. You think Rezark has been sacrificing these women? The question triggered a flash of his fiancée's face in his mind, and Talon balled his fist until the white of his bones stood out beneath his taut skin. A life for each stone, Casca said grimly. So only one sacrifice remains to complete the set. Casca nodded gravely. Time is running out. What happens after the eighth sacrifice? According to the legends, the Winter Warlock's ritual resulted in a series of catastrophic avalanches in Finland that killed hundreds of people. You think Rezark is trying to bury his hometown under a mountain of snow? That's for you to find out. I took the liberty of booking you a flight to Oslo. Your plane leaves at 1800 hours. Casca leaned closer. You understand what must be done. Talon nodded. He understood. If Icegod turned out to be guilty of these crimes, their musical career would be coming to an untimely end. Chapter 4. After the show, Talon arrived at a quaint bed and breakfast nestled in the center of the city. A soothing warmth greeted him inside the front lobby. When he checked in hours earlier, there had been a sour, middle-aged man behind the reception desk, but an attractive blonde in her 20s now stood in his place. She looked up from a thick chemistry book and regarded Talon with friendly eyes. "Enjoying sunny Norway," she said. "Should have booked that trip to Hawaii." To Talon's surprise, he returned her smile. Something about the desk clerk's open, genuine expression broke down his defenses. He'd been guarded around women since the death of his fiancée. His whole world had crumbled when he lost Michelle. Grief threatened to render him useless, and he had replaced the emotion with anger that quickly metastasized into armor. He knew he couldn't go on indefinitely like this. His self-imposed solitude was taking its psychological toll. No woman could ever take Michelle's place, but she'd want him to move on or at least find momentary comfort from the horrors he hunted. Part of him was tempted to keep the conversation going, but he decided against it. This was neither the time nor the place. Talon quickly wished the Scandinavian beauty a good night and turned towards the staircase. A minute later, he stepped into his room. It mirrored the warmth of the establishment. The wood-paneled walls and plush carpets created the illusion of being in a cozy cabin, but the titanium case resting on the freshly made bed reminded him that he wasn't here on vacation. Talon switched on the TV to a local news station. He couldn't understand the language, but drew some comfort from the sound of other human voices. The scent of the pub clung to him, and his hands felt like blocks of ice. A hot shower would hopefully wash away the grime and get his blood pumping. Unfortunately, it took forever for the water to warm up. The heaters hissed and strained, waging a losing battle against the frigid cold outside. Talon made his shower a quick one. As he toweled himself off, he caught a glimpse of his reflection. His physique was perfectly muscled, without an ounce of fat, and lined with various scars accrued over the last decade of warfare. A history of violence had been etched over his body. The largest scar happened to be the most recent one. An inverted, five-pointed star had been carved into his massive chest. Talon earned the pentagram during his first battle with Zagan back in San Francisco, and no laser technology in the world could remove the thick-webbed scar tissue. The demonic symbol of darkness served as a daily reminder of the enemy he faced. Talon slipped into a t-shirt and sweats, then returned to the bedroom. He was still on New York time and refused to go to bed just yet. He feared that a restless night lay ahead for him, a night in which he would be haunted by the lifeless faces of the missing women. Better to put his excess energy to good use and once more review all the intel at his disposal. With the TV news droning away in the background, he started analyzing a map of Norway and noting where the victims had gone missing. The first woman had vanished in Oslo on the same weekend that Icegod was performing in the capital. Four more women disappeared in surrounding towns. Talon quickly established a link with Icegod's touring schedule. The police weren't seeing the pattern because they didn't know what to look for. Casca had approached the case from a completely different angle and established the connection. Did the live shows factor into some type of overarching occult ritual? Talon wondered. He remembered all too well how Rezok's guttural, haunting music set had mesmerized the crowd. It sent a chill down Talon's spine. He didn't consider himself a superstitious or overtly spiritual person. A born skeptic, he viewed reality from a practical perspective. The last year had forced him to change that about himself. Letting go of his old worldview had been the hardest part. Stories he would have once found laughable now defined his daily reality. Talon switched from the map to a series of articles Casca had put together for him. Ever since Ice God's earlier troubles with the law, the band had become ghosts. Little was known about the Eerie Quartet. They didn't seem to have a phone number, email, or mailing address. Razok's band communicated with their fanbase solely through their website. Gigs were announced at random times, and you had to be a devoted follower who checked their page on a regular basis to know where to find them next. They had no label and released all their music online. All that was known about them was that they resided somewhere in the snowy mountains near the city of Yilo, a resort town located about 200 miles from Bergen. Weirdly enough, Ice God's elusive behavior added to their dark appeal. In their fans' minds, they had become icy specters that haunted the slopes and only sought out civilization when it was time to spread their gloomy message. In an extremely jaded age, they'd managed to build an effective, even captivating mythology. Talon's attention suddenly shifted to the television. Video showed police officers combing a ski trail. He snatched the remote and raised the volume. As soon as the news anchor's words filled the hotel room, Talon realized he might have to push up his timetable. Despite the language barrier, he surmised that another woman had gone missing. The authorities were organizing search parties for a London-based marketing executive who had returned to Norway for an extended weekend. The image of an attractive brunette flickered over the screen and stirred dark memories in Talon. For a surreal split second, he thought he was looking at Michelle. What was happening to him? He'd better pull himself together. His fiancée was gone. Had been for 4 months. The latest missing woman in this case had nothing to do with his past tragedy. On screen, a news anchor requested that anyone with information on Kristen's whereabouts call in. Talon's gut told him the hotline wouldn't be ringing tonight. He suspected that the other women were already dead, but maybe this most recent victim still had a chance, if he moved fast enough. Energized by this new development, Talon stepped up to the suitcase on the bed and dialed in the combination Casca had given him before he left New York. He popped the clasps and the case snapped open. He peered down at a pistol, knife, and silencer. When he first arrived, the equipment had already been waiting for him in this hotel room, the perfect present for a killer. The arsenal served as a persuasive reminder of the power of wealth. No matter how strict the gun laws of the countries he traveled to, Simon's contacts always managed to procure what he needed. Talon snapped on a pair of gloves and retrieved a 9mm Glock from the foam cutout. He inspected the slide, chamber, firing pin, and finally the trigger. The gun appeared to be in perfect working order. He removed a magazine, chambered a round, and scanned the GPS tracking app on his phone. A map of Bergen filled the screen, dominated by a moving blue dot. Ice God was on the move. Chapter 5. Talon had earlier rented a Nissan Versa and now steered the vehicle down a road slick with black ice. The sun rose early in Norway during the winter months, and even though it was only a little past 5 a.m., daylight was chasing away the shadows. Snow enveloped the air and the windshield wipers were working overtime. Talon kept checking the screen of his GPS tracker. He'd been driving for 3 hours now and it looked like Ice God was headed for Yilo. The target had opted to take RV-50, which cut through the mountains from west to east. A shimmering lake framed the road to his left, while a dense copse of trees lined his right. The undeniable raw beauty of the landscape almost made Talon forget the grim reason for his visit. The GPS signal turned off the main road and climbed a winding mountain trail. The trees grew denser, and snow seemed to be everywhere. 15 minutes later, the blip stopped, and Talon slowed his vehicle. He pulled to the side of the road and parked next to the dense tree line. A heavy mist clung to the forest like a shroud. With Yilo still a few miles away, Talon wasn't sure why Ice God had stopped. He decided his safest bet was to proceed on foot. Decked out in a white snowsuit, he would be practically indistinguishable from the wintry terrain. Talon braced himself, opened the car door, and let out a sharp curse. The air outside cut like an icy blade, quick and without mercy. Talon wasn't a stranger to extreme climates. He had fought in the merciless heat of the Arabian desert. completed missions in the harsh humidity of Indonesian jungles, and attended grueling classes at the Northern Warfare Training Center in Alaska, a school for Arctic operations. But such unrelenting low temperatures could chip away at even the toughest individual. He turned toward the darkened tree line on the right side of the snow-covered road, withdrew his Glock 9mm from the shoulder holster, and entered the woods. His boots crunched over the hard-packed snow as he passed ice-encrusted thickets and trees. Despite the burgeoning sunlight, the forest remained swathed in shadows. As he closed in on the transmitter, Talon couldn't shake the uneasy sensation that he was utterly alone in the wilderness. He felt like the last man on Earth, trudging across a frozen primordial landscape. One of the hardest parts of his new war was the solitude. Back in his Delta days, he'd been part of a team, a tight-knit unit. Nowadays, he was a lone knight on a dangerous crusade. Casca always remained in contact, but the billionaire could not directly follow Talon into the dark places his missions led him to. Talon slowed his approach. According to his pulsing GPS tracker, he had almost reached the van. Guard up, he peered through a cluster of pine trees at a small parking area used by hikers and cross-country skiers. There was no sign of the black van in the snowy lot. Talon double-checked his GPS tracker. According to the readings, the signal was emanating from the deserted rest area. Talon's eyes narrowed as he spotted a white shape at the center of the lot. Someone had built a snowman. The playful, usually innocent image filled him with dread. They had made the transmitter, he realized. The snowman was a message. He waited for a beat, senses processing his surroundings. Were Rezak and his crew hiding nearby? Instead of entering the parking area and exposing himself to a possible ambush, he moved through the woods, circling the desolate space while using the trees as cover. After clearing the whole area without detecting anything suspicious, Talon relaxed slightly. Gun firmly in hand, he entered the parking lot. Strange. He saw no footprints or tire tracks. Had the fresh snowfall erased all traces of Ice God's presence? Talon approached the snowman. As he closed in, details of the barbaric sight before him became apparent. A knife thrust from the snowman's head, and splashes of a red liquid ran down its side. Blood. Worst of all were the eyes. They had once belonged to a living creature. Not human, thank God, but a deer or a cow. The transmitter formed the snowman's mouth. A warning. Game on, Talon thought. The sound of rustling branches made him whirl, his gaze fastened on the source of the noise. A raven. The bird regarded Talon with beady, lifeless eyes and let out a guttural, malevolent caw before taking flight. Talon tracked the bird as it vanished among the trees. A pensive expression crept into his face. Ravens played a major role in the black metal scene. They were the messengers of Odin and the harbingers of doom. Many bands used the carrion bird's feathers to complete their Nordic noir look. Was the raven's appearance a coincidence, or could there be more to it? Talon's gaze shifted back to the blood-soaked snowman. It sent a pretty clear message. Don't fuck with us. He had underestimated Ice God, and the first round went to them. Rezak probably thought he was dealing with a journalist or some other media watchdog who would scare easily. He was in for a deadly surprise. Chapter 6. Kristen's eyes fluttered open, and for a disoriented moment she had no clue where she was or how she'd gotten there. The dark room seemed cluttered and alien. Milky light seeped through a small, dirt-encrusted window and revealed an assortment of skis and snowboards stacked against the walls. Dust and cobwebs covered everything. She had to be inside a storage shed of some kind. She tried to move only to realize that her hands and feet were tied to a heavy oak chair. Thick strands of rope bit into her skin, cutting off her circulation while keeping her immobilized. She opened her mouth to scream for help, but only a croak escaped her lips. Blood stung the back of her parched throat. God, what she wouldn't give for a glass of water at this point. As the initial burst of adrenaline wore off, Kristen started noticing how cold it was. She might be indoors, but no one had bothered to switch on the heat. The room had become a freezer, and each time she exhaled, white puffs of air clouded her face. Her teeth chattered as questions ripped through her mind. What had happened? Where was she? How had she gotten here? And why was she tied up? Searching her memory, she remembered skiing down the slopes and running into the spooky strangers with the skull masks. One of the men had driven his gloved fist into her face, and afterwards there was only darkness. She had no clue what time or day it was, or how long she'd been out for. All she knew was that she had to get out of here before the Skull Men returned. Terror threatened to seize hold of her, and it required all her self-control to calm her nerves. Her advertising career was highly stressful, and many days felt like barely contained chaos. As a coping strategy, she had started to listen to a ton of personal empowerment podcasts designed to master stress. All her self-help shows shared a key philosophy. Learn to control your thoughts instead of letting them control you. Thoughts triggered emotions, and the wrong emotion could impact performance and behavior. Tapping into some of these techniques, Kristen blocked out the grim details of her predicament and focused on filling her lungs with oxygen. She wouldn't let panic get the best of her. After a few minutes of controlled breathing, her heartbeat slowed and her thoughts began to clear. She might be a prisoner, but for the moment, her captors had left her alone. If she found a way to loosen her restraints, she could make a go for the nearby window. Unfortunately, the Skull Gang appeared to be professionals. No matter how hard she strained against the ropes, they wouldn't budge. Nevertheless, she couldn't allow herself to give up. The beam of light lancing the storage room was a ray of hope egging her on. Freedom within her grasp, she concentrated and began to rock the chair back and forth. At first, the heavy oak chair would barely budge. Kristen refused to be discouraged. She had clawed her way to the top in a competitive male-dominated field. Obstacles weren't setbacks, but a call to try harder. With a shout of defiance, she brought all her weight to bear and the chair toppled over. It crashed to the floor with a loud bang, and the impact rattled her body. For a moment, she remained still, adjusting to the new angle of the dark room. She had hoped the maneuver would break the arm of the chair and allow her to bring her tied hands to the front. Hey, it worked in the movies, but real life refused to cooperate. The chair remained intact, and her hands stayed tied behind her back. Shit. Kristen was still contemplating her next move when a shadow fell over her. She wasn't alone any longer. A snow-white German shepherd loomed before her, more wolf than dog. His snarling teeth were exposed, and the pink of his ears clearly visible. For a split second, Kristen fought back a chilling visual, those terrible jaws snapping out and closing around her throat, spectral white fur turning crimson as the beast shredded her neck and tore off her face. Oh, God. If the wolf dog chose to attack, she'd be done for. Before her terrifying vision could become reality, an equally pale hand gripped the animal's collar and restrained him. Rezok had arrived. Gently, he began to stroke the dog's head, calming the salivating beast. Her kidnapper wasn't wearing the skull mask any longer. The dead white of his features made him appear barely human in the dull light of the storage room. Judging from the pallor of his skin, her abductor shared a key trait with the dog. They were both albinos. This insight birthed another thought. The man's genetic condition would seriously narrow down the pool of suspects in a police lineup. His willingness to reveal himself like this could only mean he had no intention of ever letting Kristen leave this place alive. "Please," she said, her voice a glassy whisper. Her terror had returned with a vengeance. Rezok grabbed the head of the chair and almost effortlessly righted it. Tears welled in Kristen's eyes, but she fought them back. She would not allow this bastard to see her break down in front of him.
"What do you want from me?"
Rezok turned toward the nearby table and snatched a cup of water. Without saying a word, he brought the cup to her lips. The liquid made her think of burnt rubber, and she concluded that it must be melted snow. She didn't care, and greedily sipped the water. Her captor had barely wetted her mouth when he withdrew the water. What cruel game was this?
"Please, let me drink. I'm so thirsty."
For a beat, Rezok's eyes remained locked on her, and she only recognized contempt in them. He held out his other hand to her. A small object about the size of a quarter rested in his ivory palm. At first, Kristen didn't know what she was looking at. As Rezok's long fingers moved closer, she realized the item was a stone, its rough surface etched with a runic symbol. Rezok shot her an expectant look and said,
"Swallow."
Kristen understood. If she wanted more water, she would have to oblige.
"No."
Rezok brought the stone up to her face and pressed its cool, mineral surface against her closed lips. Kristen vehemently shook her head. No way in hell would she swallow that fucking stone. Razok waved his hand at the shadows. Two figures stepped out of the darkness behind Kristen. One grabbed her forehead and pulled her head back, while the other squeezed her nostrils shut, making it impossible for her to breathe through her nose. For the moment, her thirst was forgotten. She held her breath as long as possible, but ultimately she had to gasp for air. The second her lips parted, Razok pushed the stone into her open mouth. Kristen bit down on the artifact and spat it right into the albino's face. The runestone hit the floor. Razok's eyes lit up with a white-hot fury, and he backhanded her. The vicious blow whipped her head back and almost knocked her unconscious.
"Oh my God, please, someone help me."
Razok scooped up the stone and regarded Kristen. She immediately spotted the combat knife in his hand. Razok pressed its tip into her chin, drawing a point of blood. Features bereft of emotion, he brought the bloody blade to his mouth and licked it clean. Kristen almost let out a scream, but the gloved hand of one of her other captors clamped down on her mouth, preventing any sound from escaping.
"Swallow, or I cut your face off."
The coldness of the eyes boring into Kristen did not suggest that was an idle threat. Razok held out the runestone, and this time she gave in to his demand. As the melted snow washed the stone down her throat, Kristen knew all hope was lost. Chapter 7. "They made me," Talon said. He was back inside his rental car and Skyping with Casca. The billionaire didn't appear surprised. Between their troubles with the authorities and over-eager fans, they must be pretty paranoid. On the plus side, they probably think you're merely another reporter looking for a story. Talon hoped Casca was right. "I'm afraid I have some more bad news," Talon said. "There's been another kidnapping. A woman was reported missing while skiing in the Yilo area." "They found their 8th sacrifice," Casca said. "Do you think she's still alive?" Talon asked. "I'm pretty sure we'd know if Razok had completed the ritual. You must stop this final sacrifice."
"I intend to. You dig up anything else on their whereabouts? You know who Pete Best is?"
Talon shook his head.
"Should I? He's only part of rock and roll history."
Talon narrowed his eyes. Casca must have sensed his growing impatience as he quickly added, "The Beatles fired Pete Best in 1966 and replaced him with Ringo Starr." "And how does any of this relate to what's happening here in Norway?"
"Icegod has their own Pete Best."
Talon considered this for a moment. "You're saying they booted out one of their original members?"
"Exactly. 2 years ago, Icegod officially kicked Jonas Enberg out of the band."
"You think he has the lowdown on where Razok is holed up?"
"Can't hurt to ask him."
"I assume you have an address."
"Let's just say I made a handsome donation to the Cursed Coven, a black metal blog, and they were kind enough to steer me toward Mr. Enberg's current whereabouts."
Money talks, and fortunately Casca had deep pockets. Talon had seen the effectiveness of bribes firsthand, back when he was greasing Afghan warlords' palms with greenbacks during the war with the Taliban. Casca continued, "Enberg owns a bar in Yilo, and apparently he and Razok didn't part on the best of terms. In other words, he might be open to cooperating. Hopefully he can point you in the right direction.
Sounds like it's time I paid Jonas a visit."
One way or another, Talon would get the man to talk. It was a little past 10 o'clock when Talon pulled up to the snowed-in watering hole operated by Jonas Enberg. The icy downpour had stopped, and the sun was even poking out from dense cloud cover. Talon expected the reprieve to be momentary. Who knew what might happen to the weather if Razok succeeded in sacrificing the last girl? Talon stepped up to the bar's entrance and was surprised to find it open at this early hour. He gave the door a shove and entered the establishment. The joint made him think of an oversized snow cabin, all wood and stone. He appeared to be the only patron. Alert, Talon moved deeper into the bar, his boots leaving a watery trail on the floor. He'd taken a few steps when Jonas emerged from the back, his rough-hewn features framed by a long mane of messy blonde hair. He carried a large steel keg without great effort. Jonas was about 5 inches taller than Talon, and probably outweighed him by 60 pounds. Some flab, but also a lot of muscle. Thor gone to seed. He walked with a noticeable limp. With a loud grunt, Jonas lowered the heavy keg. The impact of metal hitting the floor shook the bar. Jonas wiped the sweat off his thick brow and regarded Talon with a mixture of suspicion and irritation. "According to Google, this is the best place in town to grab a beer," Talon said, immediately establishing that he was an American.
We don't open until 4 o'clock,
Jonas said in lightly accented English. It was the second language for most Norwegians.
I could use a drink.
Talon waved a 500-krone banknote at Jonas. The man shrugged, turned toward a tap, and without asking Talon what he wanted, drew him a pint of the local brew. He placed it on the wooden bar and snatched the cash. Keep the change. Jonas shot him a surprised look, and his scowl softened just a tad. 500 krone came out to about $100. Talon took his first swig of beer. The alcohol felt good and warmed his insides after being out in the cold all day.
You own this place?
It's a family business. I inherited the bar when my father passed.
Was that before or after you were kicked out of Isgard? Renewed suspicion etched into Jonas's gaze.
Who the hell are you?
A concerned citizen looking for your old friend Razak. Think you might be able to point me in the right direction? Jonas's face grew blank. Talon had just hit his shit list.
Leave now.
You're not gonna let me finish my drink?
Now.
The massive barkeeper took a step closer, moving with surprising speed, despite both his bulk and limp. Most people would have backed off at this point. Talon wasn't most people. You know Razak is bad news. If I don't find him, people are going to get hurt.
What the fuck are you talking about? This conversation is over. Now, get your ass out of here.
Jonas threw the money in Talon's face and made a move to reach for him with one massive paw. Talon whipped out his Glock. He didn't point it at Jonas. He didn't have to. The giant froze.
Who are you?
That's none of your concern. Tell me where Razak is hiding out, and I'll be on my way. Jonas cast a cautious glance around before he spoke, his voice a whisper.
I can't help you. 2 years ago, Razak almost killed me.
I thought you injured your leg in a skiing accident. Jonas grew quiet. You're scared of him.
You should be too.
Why did you quit the band?
We started out wanting to make angry, beautiful music that would wake people up. We dreamt of holding up a mirror to Norwegian society, expose the hypocrisy.
So what happened?
Razak became more interested in burning down churches and restoring Norway's old beliefs, dabbling in ancient rituals and superstition. He hates this country, hates all of its middle-class Christian values. They'd preach tolerance and forgiveness on Sundays, and the rest of the week they'd pick on him for being different.
Talon could empathize, to an extent. As the son of a diplomat, he'd grown up in a dozen countries, and each new place had forced him to reinvent himself. New languages, new customs, new bullies. By the time he was 12, he'd become a chameleon, a quality that worked to his advantage both during his years as an operator and in his newly chosen crusade. Life wasn't always fair, and Razak had clearly received a raw deal, but it didn't excuse murder, or give him the right to dabble in powers man was not meant to wield. Razak had crossed the line. You were his friend.
I've said enough. Where do I find him?
The mountains. Jonas paused for a beat before he continued.
The old ski lodge. Now get out of here before I call the cops.
How can I be sure you're not going to warn him? Jonas pulled the right leg of his pants back, revealing the steel prosthesis where flesh and bone should be.
Razak shattered every bone in my leg and left me on the mountain to die. I was lucky that someone found me in time, but they couldn't save my leg.
You told them you wiped out.
I wanted Razak to leave me alone.
Has he?
I think he enjoys seeing me living in fear more than he would putting me out of my misery. Razak doesn't forgive, nor does he forget.
Talon took a step closer and said,
Neither do I.
With these words, Talon slipped the Glock back in his shoulder holster and left the bar. Chapter 8. The Figo Ski Resort had closed down 10 years earlier when newer, glitzier hotels started stealing business from it. The owner had struggled to keep the operation afloat, but ultimately succumbed to economic pressures. On February 14, 2002, the ski lift made its last ascent up the mountain and had stood abandoned ever since. At first, Talon kept consulting his GPS as he trudged up a woodsy trail, using it as his guide. After about 30 minutes, he noticed the cable line of the old ski lift winding its way toward the lodge 1,000 feet above. Rust-covered chairs spaced at regular intervals dangled and swayed forlornly under the gray, hazy sky. Talon wondered how different this mountain had been when the lift was still in operation. How full of life. The area seemed forsaken and haunted by the past, just a faint memory of its former glory. Talon didn't know what sort of security precautions awaited him up at the lodge, and decided to approach from the forest side instead of using the main road. Unlike many places he'd infiltrated over the years, this time he wasn't afforded the luxury of doing recon on the property ahead of the mission. He would have to wing it. Talon climbed in a haunted winter landscape. The minutes stretched, and the march started to lull him into a nearly hypnotic state. Wind bit at the exposed portion of his face, and the relentless cold seemed to find its way in everywhere. The swirling clouds of snow fell hard and thick now, and the flakes left a bitter, metallic aftertaste on his lips. His hands had grown numb, and fatigue was weighing him down. His jet lag was suddenly catching up with him. Talk about perfect timing. A mechanical groan filled the eerie forest and jolted Talon back to full alertness. He shook off his lethargy, his gaze struggling to penetrate the flurry of snowflakes ahead. When the curtain of whirling ice finally parted, the vague outline of the decaying ski lodge grew visible. Wedged into the frozen wilderness was a building that looked like the bastard child of the Overlook Hotel and the Winchester House. The large main structure was in severe disrepair. Time and the elements had done their fair share of damage. A craggy, snow-covered mountain loomed above the poorly maintained building. The abandoned ski lodge seemed a fitting base of operations for the sinister members of Ice God. The thought had barely crossed Talon's mind when one of the band members emerged from the decrepit structure. Talon hit the snowy ground, his white snow gear allowing him to become one with the frozen landscape. He brought up a pair of binoculars and peered at the old hotel with eyes as cold as the air that raked his lungs. More members of Razok's Freakfest grew visible. Talon's breath hitched as he spotted the woman, whom he hadn't expected to find alive. Two of the black metal musicians were dragging Kristen toward a waiting snowmobile, its thrumming engine the source of the noise Talon had picked up earlier. They had all traded their corpse paint for skull masks. Kinda early in the year for the Halloween getup, Talon thought. One of Razok's goons forced Kristen to take a seat on the snowmobile, and he joined her. Razok emerged from the ski lodge, now decked out in a jet-black ski suit with a gray skull helmet shrouding his bone-white face. He didn't use any poles as he skied away from the hotel, as formidable a presence on the slopes as he was on the stage. The snowmobile with Kristen on it tore after him, and the last two band members followed on skis. Moments later, the dense forest had swallowed them whole. Talon picked himself up. He pulled a collapsible snowboard off his back and hit a button. The board switchbladed out to full size. Moving quickly, he clamped in his feet and tore after Ice God, a predator seeking his prey. Soon, the band's blood would be coloring the snow red. The snowmobile blasted into the wooded darkness. A white splinter of muted sunlight flashed through the pines racing past Kristen. She clung to consciousness as the stark, surreal landscape flew by. The barren trees seemed alive, reaching out for them with a terrible hunger. One of Razok's men sat behind Kristen, one powerful hand hooked around her neck, while the other operated the vehicle's controls, navigating the Arctic obstacle course. Kristen knew her time had run out. This was the end of the line. They were about to kill her. She'd perish deep within these snowy woods, where her body would never be found. God, what had she done to deserve this? Her life flashed before her eyes. She thought of her parents, good friends, and old lovers. Thought of how her father and mother would suffer, never knowing what happened to their daughter. Tears welled in her eyes. It wasn't fair. A fat tree jumped into view in front of them, head-on collision imminent. Kristen's captor was forced to relinquish his hold on her neck so that he could grab the controls with both hands. The snowmobile performed a hard right, dodging the tree and sending a plume of snow into the air. For a moment, the man was distracted, and Kristen saw her chance to escape. Body responding before her mind could talk her out of it, she hurled herself from the moving snowmobile. Kristen's captor had expected little resistance from the mousy, broken woman, and let out a sharp curse as she disappeared into the snow. By the time he stopped the vehicle, Kristen was already on her feet and running at full bore. Her heart was pounding, and the roar in her ears wouldn't stop. As she sprinted through the dense forest, she spotted a series of strange items dangling from the trees. Animal bones, or were they human, hung from the branches on strings and danced back and forth like primitive wind chimes. Rune symbols had been cut into the frost-covered bark. It gave the woods an air of dark magic, almost as if everything inside it had become part of some ancient, long-forgotten ritual. Kristen couldn't shake the feeling that she'd stumbled into her own personal Blair Witch Project, a flick she'd caught on cable years earlier. It had kept her up for days. She slowed, each step becoming hesitant. The eerie trees gave way to a small, snowy clearing, and now Kristen stopped dead in her tracks. The world tilted and elongated. The tree line filled with unnatural life, transformed into a grotesque, nightmarish dolly painting. Her eyes fastened on a deep hole dug into the snow. With growing dread, she realized that the grave was meant for her. A second later, her eyes spotted what remained of the other seven women, and she understood the dark fate that awaited her. Kristen's brain was still struggling to make sense of the horrific tableau when Razok and his crew emerged from the surrounding forest. Chapter 9. Talon shot down a steep hill and rippled into the waiting woods. As soon as he disappeared under the dense canopy of branches, the forest grew quiet. The sputtering snowmobile had become a faint rumble. In the near distance, Talon caught dark glimpses of his targets against the white background. Ice God's penchant for wearing black was working in his favor. The dense tree cover made it cumbersome to keep advancing on his snowboard. Talon quickly snapped off his bindings. From here on out, he'd continue on foot. All of a sudden, the snowmobile's engine turned off. An unnatural, disconcerting silence descended on the backwoods. Talon had spent enough time outdoors to know that the wild was filled with life, if you knew what to listen for. This felt different. A complete absence of sound greeted him. He also noticed the strange runes carved into the nearby trees. About every fifth one bore the Norse symbols on its surface. Talon dismissed the growing sense of atavistic unease taking root in the pit of his stomach. He forged ahead, eyes alert. The forest was soaked in shadows, with only sporadic shafts of sunlight able to penetrate the dense canopy. The members of Ice God seemed to have vanished into thin air. Talon's heart hammered in his chest, and suddenly he wasn't sure who was hunting whom. Did his quarry know that they were being stalked? Had they lured him into a trap? Before Talon could consider that possibility, Kristen's scream pierced the silence of the forest. The cry of terror jolted Talon into action. Gun out, he pressed on. Following the panic-filled voice, he arrived at the edge of the clearing and stopped dead in his tracks. An overwhelming sensation of dread sliced into his soul and he gripped the gun tighter. Eight round objects sprouted from the frigid earth. A closer look revealed the full horror. He was staring at the missing women. They had been buried up to their necks in the snow with solely their heads exposed. Their bluish faces were frozen in the rictus of a scream and coated in a veneer of ice. Only Kristen clung to life in her own snowbound grave, eyes squirming with terror. Razok loomed before her, shimmering blade in hand. The other three black metal musicians formed a half circle around him, knives out. Their muffled, monotone chanting resounded through the woods, the lips under their skull masks uttering words in an ancient Norse language that bore little resemblance to the Norwegian spoken in the country today. Talon sensed that Razok and his cohorts were close to completing their gruesome ritual. Only one final sacrifice remained. Judging from the bluish tint to Kristen's skin, Talon didn't think she had much time left. Some ancient terror would be birthed on this mountain when the chanting stopped, and Kristen succumbed to her bitter ordeal. Snow whipped Talon's face as he considered his options. If he just started firing at them, one of the knife-wielding targets might reach Kristen before Talon's bullets took him out. He needed Razok's crew to move away from the woman. A diversion was in order. Talon's gaze combed the forest and fell upon the parked snowmobile nearby. Under different circumstances, he might have allowed himself a dark grin. He had found his plan of attack. But these circumstances were too dire for that luxury. He closed in on the vehicle and cranked up its engine. The snowmobile's roar pierced the air, drowning out Ice God's guttural sing-song. Razok and his men froze. Talon had their attention. The Skull Gang exchanged a few words and darted into the woods. Seconds later, one of the Norwegians stepped up to the rumbling snowmobile and paused. He leaned forward and killed the engine, eyes scoping the area. He was still trying to figure out how his ride had switched on by itself when a laser dot found the center of his sculpted mask. His face erupted in a spray of crimson and fiberglass. Skullman crumpled, bloody brain matter speckling the snow. A second cult member appeared, and firing again, Talon stitched a bloody track across his chest. The man heaved and lurched, soon joining his buddy on the ground in a puddle of blood. The voice of a third band member rang out, calling his comrades, a note of panic coloring his words. The corpse paint, black clothing, and skull masks all served to make Razok's crew seem larger than life and more than human. The illusion was being shattered by the power of steel. The third cultist grew visible in the dark forest. After a few steps, he sensed movement from a snowy embankment. He stopped and narrowed his eyes, detecting something off about the snowdrift. An instant later, the snow shifted, coming alive. Talon rose from the mountain of ice, an angel of death. One gloved hand cupped the band member's mouth, while the other drove a knife into the base of his neck. After a quick twist of the handle, the target's entire body went from rigid to limp in one convulsion as the brainstem was severed. Three down, one to go. In other news, Ice God broke up tonight. Talon stood still and listened like the predator he was, senses fully engaged with his environment. The lead singer had vanished. Talon combed the forest, but failed to detect any movement among the trees. Where had Razok gone? Once more, Kristen's cry for help carried through the night. Every fiber of Talon's being was on high alert. He wanted to come to the terrified woman's rescue, but he didn't want to give away his position either. Screw that. Kristen's condition was worsening by the minute. He had to act now. Casting caution aside, Talon burst into the clearing. Despite the many brutalities of war he'd experienced over the last decade, he was affected by the sight before him. The clearing had become a horrific mass burial ground, with the heads of the dead acting as icy grave markers. Talon saw no signs of decay, the cold perfectly preserving the women's lifeless flesh. Talon crossed the icy cemetery to Kristen. She stared up at him with big, terror-stricken eyes now framed in frost. Frozen tears, Talon realized. On some instinctive level, she seemed to comprehend that Talon wasn't one of her kidnappers.
"Help me," she pleaded.
He scanned the surroundings and spotted a shovel leaning against a tree. Ice God must have used it to dig Kristen's vertical grave. Moving fast, he snatched the tool. Eyes still fixed on the trees, he holstered his gun. He didn't like it, but there was no other way. He would need both hands if he hoped to free the woman from her icy prison. The metal shovel sliced into the ground. Talon put his back into it, but the snow seemed unwilling to release its human bounty. Even worse, he would dig and seemingly make progress only to turn around and find the snow back in its original place. Was the ice actually fighting him in some way? Don't give up now. Talon redoubled his efforts. As he launched his renewed attack against the frozen soil, he sensed eyes on him. Was it Razok? Following a crazy hunch, Talon shifted his attention to one of the buried women. For a second, he could have sworn her head moved.
Impossible.
Correction, kiddo. Impossible in the old world, but this is your new reality. Haven't the last 4 months taught you anything? Talon analyzed the eerie heads more closely. Their purplish, frostbitten skin made them look barely human. He was about to advance when he sensed movement behind him. Body in full combat mode, heart pounding, he pivoted toward another of the buried victims. For a terrifying split second, the lifeless face glaring back at him with an accusing, unforgiving expression belonged to his dead fiancée. The blood drained from Talon's features.
Why didn't you try this hard to save me? Is this worthless bitch more important to you than your own fiancée?
Talon clenched his jaw and blocked out the haunting voice in his head. What he was hearing and seeing couldn't be real. The magic only gave life to his own dark thoughts and guilt. Galvanized by rage, Talon spun toward Kristen and continued his furious shoveling. He had become a man possessed. This time, no matter how hard the ice fought back, he made progress. He kept digging and digging, metal carving away until he could reach for Kristen's halfway exposed arm. His fingers closed around her frozen limb, and he pulled with all his might. Her body moved toward him, one strenuous inch at a time. Suddenly, something yanked Kristen from below, almost as if icy hands snagged her legs and refused to surrender their prize. Kristen felt the tug, her features contorting with terror. No matter how hard the force jerked, Talon held on. "You're not going to get her." Talon clasped her arms tighter, face twisting with effort, muscles and joints pulled to the breaking point. "Let go of her!" A final excruciating effort, and Kristen was out of the hole. She collapsed on top of him, clinging to him like a newborn, hoping to reclaim the heat of the womb. Hands touching, faces close, eyes meeting, survival stripped down to its most basic impulse, the need for warmth. They lay there for a moment before Kristen bolted upright, her whole body racked by powerful convulsions. What was happening? Talon stared as Kristen gagged and spat up a stream of snow and ice particles. Her face reddened with effort as she expelled the contents of her stomach. With each passing heave, color returned to her bluish features. After a final, powerful, retching sound, her lips ejected a small, dark object. It was one of the rune stones. Kristen's legs caved beneath her and she collapsed. Talon caught her in mid-fall and gently lowered her to the ground. Her breathing seemed to have normalized, weak, but steady. Talon shifted his focus to the other women. Ice God must have forced each of these victims to swallow a stone. Rage rose inside him, a murderous force that yearned to be directed against the mastermind who had perpetrated these savage atrocities. His chance at revenge came a second later. Rezok peeled from the circle of pines. Talon heard the fiend before he saw him. Glock leveled, he spun around. A red laser light tattooed alabaster muscle. The albino warlock had cast off his jacket and shirt, standing bare-chested in the frozen clearing. His body was as pale as his face, and for a moment he seemed to have been carved from ice. Snowflakes danced around his head, his long mane of white hair framing granite features. Runes adorned his sickly-looking flesh, and a serrated knife angled from his bony hand. He spoke in Norwegian, or perhaps it was the old tongue, as he pointed the blade at Talon. Talon somehow understood the words without knowing the language.
"The Ice God demands his sacrifice."
"Screw your Ice God," Talon thought, and fired the Glock. Or at least he tried. No bullet erupted from the muzzle. Talon's finger was glued to the trigger, arms stiff from the unbearable cold. Rezok advanced another step. His blade glittered and shimmered in the hazy, dull light. Talon tried to go for his combat knife, but his body wouldn't respond. Transformed into a statue, he was the latest victim of the Winter Warlock's magic. Rezok kept whispering away in that creepy, archaic language. Each muttered word became an icy hook that dug deep into Talon's muscles with paralyzing force. The cold had become unbearable. He instinctively understood that he was in the presence of something ancient and timeless, an unfathomable darkness that predated mankind and had been biding its time to consume the world once more. Waiting for the sun to burn out and the earth to turn into a barren, frozen ball. Waiting for the day when ice would reclaim the planet. Rezok approached his prey. Instead of driving his knife deep into Talon's prone form, he brushed past him, dismissing him like a pesky insect not worthy of his wrath. Rezok didn't seem to care that Talon had taken out his cohorts. His full attention was devoted to Kristen. Only one objective seemed to matter to the albino mage: completing the ritual. The cold kept wearing Talon down. Some of his Delta buddies used to say he had ice in his veins. It didn't feel like a joke any longer. His insides had turned solid and were tearing him apart. He almost expected snow, slick with gore, to erupt through the pores of his frozen skin. Memories began to drift away. Thoughts ceased. There was only the cold. Only the ice. As the blizzard engulfed his mind and the darkness closed in, one memory somehow fought its way to the surface. He was 22 again. He'd served in the army since turning 18, and he'd just begun the first week of the Delta selection course at Camp Dawson in West Virginia. During this phase of the process, his commanders did everything in their power to make him and his fellow recruits quit the program. The punishing obstacle course, the nights without sleeping, the mental harassment, it was beginning to take a toll on everyone. It all came to a head that day in the swampy marshlands. Each trainee had to paddle down the river and survive the freezing cold mud. Talon tried to ignore the howling winds and physical agony. The swamp consumed their bodies until nothing remained visible but their heads. All throughout, the instructors tantalized them with promises. If a few men quit, the rest would be off the hook. Talon didn't know what was worse, his chattering teeth or the incessant prodding of his tormentors. He'd been so close to giving up that night, his suffering pushing him to a place from which he feared there might be no return. Soon, it would all be over. Just one more week of this hell before the real training at Fort Bragg got underway. It was a weeding-out process, a test of mind over matter. Talon tried to will the pain away, but his mental discipline failed him. He had reached his limit. And that's when another recruit in the mud raised his voice and started to sing the Delta version of the Airborne Ranger cadence. The singer was out of tune, but there was a force behind the lyrics. An undeniable will to persevere and defy the miserable darkness. The voices multiplied as the other trainees joined the chorus, including Talon. The instructors warned them to stop, but the voices of the recruits could not be silenced. Talon heard that same song now. As the cold threatened to whisk him away into frozen oblivion, it grew louder in his mind. The voices of his old buddies joined in, their singing building in volume. The song had become Talon's world. He concentrated on the words, blocking out everything else, and soon his lips could form sounds again. At first, a ragged whisper, his voice increased in volume and strength. The warmth returned to his limbs, his will conquering the grim magic. Razok paused, realizing something was amiss. With the blade hovering inches above Kristen's neck, he turned toward Talon. His ivory skin seemed transparent, the capillaries outlined underneath. A man of ice. The words flowing from Talon's lips built into an explosive roar. A scream burst from his lungs, and suddenly Talon could move again. Life returning to his hand, he squeezed the trigger. The bullet ripped through the albino's shoulder in a volley of gore. Blood sprayed the snow, but the ice rippled and flexed, quickly absorbing the scarlet life force, its appetite whetted. Before he could fire again, Razok flung his knife at Talon. The blade buried itself into his shoulder in a spray of blood, sending a wave of agony down his arm. Talon stifled a scream and dropped the gun. Mercifully, the numbness brought on by the cold kept the worst of the pain at bay. Before he could scramble after the Glock, the icy ground swirled and sucked up the weapon. Shit! There was no time to ponder the phenomenon as Razok closed in. He had scooped up a blade that one of the other band members had dropped earlier. They started circling each other. The heads of the seven dead women looked on in silent indifference, forming a morbid arena around the two combatants. Razok lunged at Talon with rapid-fire strokes, the blade an extension of his long arm. Talon staggered backward, pulled out the reddened blade from his shoulder with a hiss of pain, and brought it up just in time to block two diagonal slashes at his face and avoid a stab at his throat. The blades clung together and sprang apart. Razok's height and longer reach was giving him an edge in this fight. Talon had to turn Razok's advantage into a disadvantage. He weaved through the snow, feinted an attack with his knife while striking out with his boot. The plan was to break Razok's wrist, easy in theory, but a little more challenging in practice. The albino's reflexes were near superhuman. Spider-like fingers caught Talon's foot, yanked hard, and flipped him around. Under normal circumstances, Talon would have maintained his balance, but the snowy environment turned against him. His boots sunk deep into the shifting animated white mass. The terrain was Razok's ally. Chunks of ice snagged Talon's ankles and hurled him to the ground. Talon rolled over the snow and feathered back to his feet, but the maneuver had cost him precious seconds. Razok was now right on top of him and rammed his elbow into Talon's face, snapping his head around while simultaneously hacking at his arm. Steel bit into Talon's white ski suit and turned it red. Razok's next kick targeted Talon's right hand. The boot connected, sending his blade flying. The albino loomed, his ghostly face hovering mere inches from Talon. Razok was about to come in for the death blow when he grew still, mouth distorting in a mixture of pain and surprise. Standing behind him was Kristen, Who knows what reserve of strength she tapped into, but she had snatched one of the skiing poles that the members of Ice God dropped earlier, and buried the tip deep into Razok's back. He pulled the pole from his flesh with a splash of scarlet and whirled toward Kristen. Howling in rage, he punched her in the face and sent her flying. She landed next to one of the dead women's heads, empty dead eyes boring into Kristen's. Razok spun back toward Talon. Fortunately, Kristen's bold move had bought Talon precious seconds to prepare a counterattack. He whipped out a marker flare from one of his ski suit's pouches, snapped the cap off, and a fiery explosion of light showered the icy surroundings. Razok brought up his hands, shielding his light-sensitive eyes. Talon snatched his own K-bar from his belt and moved in for the kill, but Razok still had some fight left in him. Bony fingers caught Talon's incoming arm and clamped around the wrist holding the blade. Razok mouthed words in the old Norse tongue, hoping to draw on the ice god's magic once more. You're not using that trick again. Using all his weight and strength, Talon head-butted Razok. The albino staggered backwards. Talon's K-bar found Razok's neck before he could recuperate. The steel went in with little trouble, slicing from ear to ear in one fluid motion. Razok stood dead still for a shocked beat before hitting the snow like a slain ice giant. Talon approached his defeated enemy, breathing hard, knife dripping crimson. On the ground, a dying Razok gasped for air, drowning in his own blood. Sunken eyes shot through with red peered up at his killer. But Razok wasn't quite done yet. With a last burst of strength, he scooped up the runestone Kristen had regurgitated. One hand held his gushing throat, while the other stuffed the artifact into his mouth. Without hesitation, Razok swallowed the runestone. Talon took a step back. The albino had opted to become the eighth sacrifice, thereby completing the cycle. As soon as his eyes turned up into white crescents, a rumble passed through the snowy ground. Kristen traded a fearful look with Talon, sensing that something terrible was fighting to be unleashed from the ice. They had to get out of here. Now. Talon snatched Kristen's hand and dragged her back to her feet. They stumbled out of the haunted clearing. From the corner of his eye, he saw the dead women being sucked into the snow. The icy landscape devoured their bodies just as it had fed on Talon's blood earlier. Had Talon won the battle but lost the war? He wouldn't hang around to find out. The earth shook and vibrated, branches unloading clumps of snow. It felt like an earthquake, the shifting of ice beneath them triggering intense vibrations. They were standing at ground zero of an avalanche. Talon's eyes locked on the snowmobile. A second later, he was seated at the handlebars, Kristen behind him, with her arms wrapped around his chest. He cranked up the engine and they blasted off, the vehicle's skids carving up the white carpet. Trees grew before them. Talon yanked the controls, navigating the woodsy obstacle course. They cleared the forest and hit a chute. Balls of snow showered down the slope. The ice heaved and cracked and groaned, almost as if some giant Nordic monster was battling its way to the surface. Bits of ice raining on them, they flew down the mountain at breakneck speed. Geysers of white erupted, and for a second Talon thought someone had detonated charges under the snow. They sliced through the powdery mass, skipping like a stone down the slopes. A tidal wave of ice tore after them, the snow frothing violently. The whine of the snowmobile's engine was drowned out by the rumbling mountain. Behind them, the avalanche slammed through everything in its path, pulverizing trees and animals under its crushing weight. Another enormous mass of snow erupted ahead, but Talon never slowed down. As the hill buckled and rose before them, he cranked the gas. The snowmobile lifted off and the skids weren't connected to the ground any longer. For an eternal beat, they sailed through the air until... wham! The vehicle landed hard, rattling its two passengers to the core. They had reached the bottom of the mountain, and the road below the ski trail jumped into view. The snowmobile skittered to a halt while the ocean of snow came to a gradual stop at the edge of the street. Talon allowed himself to look back and take in the battlefield of icy rubble. Razok had been trying to will an avalanche into existence and target the hometown that had wronged him. Somehow, his sacrifice had been powerful enough to bring the snow to life, but without Kristen's life force to animate it, the avalanche couldn't reach its full catastrophic potential. Below, Yilo glowed in the morning light, untouched by the power of the mountain, and ready to face another winter day. The snow seemed less cold, and the sun shone brighter. Talon had long ago accepted that his days were numbered. 10 years of military service had made him come to a grim acceptance of his own mortality. Death was a constant companion, a shadow cast by his dark mission. No man could hope to fight this type of war indefinitely. But while he waited for the final moment to arrive, he'd spill the enemy's blood and save as many lives as he could. He had just killed 4 evil men to save a city of thousands. Tonight, there wouldn't be any nightmares, and he would sleep soundly, knowing the world was a little safer. Kristen studied him, still in shock, but knowing that she was staring at the man who had saved her life. Even though the snowmobile had stopped, she refused to let go of him. Her lips curled into a hint of a smile. It made her look beautiful. Talon returned the smile, and even though it was freezing outside, for one brief moment the temperature had lost some of its bitter edge. For the first time since the events in San Francisco, he was ready to come in from the cold. This has been Occult Assassin number 2.5, Ice Shadows, a novella, written by William Massa, narrated by James Foster. Copyright 2014 by William Massa. Production copyright 2015 by William Massa.